Hello, welcome to another episode of Musicians Talk Music. I want to welcome you watching on YouTube or listening via podcast. You can find us like that. Just type Musicians Talk Music on any of the podcast platforms or go to YouTube and you'll find the channel Musicians Talk Music. I'm in sunny Los Angeles, California today with a really good friend, a great drummer, musician, Sean Horton. How are you, man?
Hello, folks.
¿Cómo estás?
¿Cómo estás? What he said.
Bien.
Bien. ¿Y tú?
Muy bien.
Sí. I'm practicing. I'm working on it.
I know Sean for a few years now. We worked together a few years back in Houston. But yeah, thanks for taking the time.
My man, thank you
to
for
do
having
this.
Me. Yeah.
And we just want to get to know you a little bit, you know, music-wise. And check, so just tell me a little bit about your beginnings, like your earliest memory of music or, you know, what sparked you to like start in the music world, or how did you, you know, grow up inside music?
Well, I heard music I grew up in the church, so I heard music in the house all the time. You know, my dad plays organ, my mom sings and sang in the choir when I was growing up. My dad played and led from the organ. He also directed the choir from the organ as well. You know, if he had a full band in the church, not just drums and organ, which was like the main thing, if we can have drums and organ, then we can have a church service. For it to be a full band, drums, bass, guitar, you know, organ and second keys and percussion, from what I remember, that wasn't common. These cats came with a whole different vibe. And granted, like, you know, my pop's team, like some of them weren't from Rochester. They weren't all from Rochester. So they're coming from different walks of life and everything, you know what I mean? So with that being said, like the music and the way that they played gospel music was way different than what was happening at that time. So,
okay.
So like you had like in the, you know, Rochester, since we're talking about like, you know, my upbringing, church was huge and it was about the gospel choirs, it was about the bands, it was about the churches, it was about who has the best bands in the churches or whatever, you know what I mean, who has the top dogs or whatever. And my dad's team, like the choir, UNC was the name of the choir, I don't remember, UNIC, something like that, they were doing unorthodox stuff to the music, so it was more progressive than traditional, you know what I mean. And people loved it.
What year are we talking
here? Man, I mean, I'm a baby, I'm two at the time. So midnight musicals were a big thing, Friday nights, starting at 11, around that time, you know what I mean? Different choirs from different churches will come, different groups, ensembles or whatever.
Yeah.
They'll come and sing and like they'll bring their bands and it would be a big thing because it'll be people that we've never seen before or friends from other churches that we knew, you know, were great, or like we knew like they had killers at their churches.
When did you start playing, or at what age did you start playing?
From what I remember, two.
You start playing at two at the church, or just like around?
Well, like playing the drums, like hitting the drums, getting a chance to sit on somebody's lap and playing the drum.
Okay.
My dad's drummer, his name was Barry Dean. His name is Barry Dean. Killer, monster, one of my biggest influences and one of my first influences that I can remember as a kid. You know, put me on his lap, had me holding his Omar King drumsticks with the ball nylon tips, and you know, I'm a kid. I see him hit things on the drums and they made loud noises. I want to do the same thing, so I did just that, and it caught me, it hooked me, you know. But then also having music in the house all the time. My dad has had his instruments in the house all the time. So it'll be times where I'll go and sneak on the B3 in the middle of the living room, hooked up to a PV amp while he was gone at work. And I'll sneak on it just to like mess around. Or my brother's Yamaha PSR-10 or something like that or whatever. And I'll mess around with it while he wasn't home. Granted, Courtney knew that I was messing around with his patches. My dad didn't know, or he says he didn't know that I, you know, changed his settings.
The throw bars and all that.
Exactly, but he said he didn't know anything about it.
Of
but,
course
you know,
he knew.
You know he knew, come on. You know, I'm not that slick. I'm young, and dumb. Young and dumb. My dad is not dumb at all.
You know? I think that could be like a form of encouragement. Like,
yeah.
Like, because he knew like you were interested in music. Yeah. He didn't want to mess that up for you, maybe. So that's pretty cool. When did you realize that this is what you wanted to do for, you know, for a living, for the rest of your life?
My first gig, playing on Macy Gray. And then doing it for like a year. My first time going to Europe.
Okay.
Doing the first tour was like, all right, cool. All right. But then going to Europe and then coming back and then playing again, whatever, was like, okay. And then when I got the next gig, going to Natasha, was like, transitioning to another, this is a good situation. Once I realized that was happening, it was like, okay, I could do this. You know what I mean? Like, I could, you know, granted, that first gig was, it wasn't brutal, but it was definitely like, you know, a boot camp.
Yeah.
Because I was playing with OGs. All of them up there was OGs. They've been playing for a long time and playing for Macy for a long time.
So would you say that this is the time that you kind of felt like, okay, I gotta get my stuff together and like practice?
No.
Practice
my
Before this or after this?
Wait, no. That came before.
Okay.
That came before.
When did you realize, like, okay, if I want to do this for a living and be good at it, I need to practice and just by myself and just with a metronome?
That came at the first time I moved to LA.
Okay.
Why?
Because you saw everybody here was killing?
I will tell you. Going to a jam session, my boy Tim Bailey, bass player, amazing bass player, brought me to this jam session called the B Jam. And on his team was Kenneth Crouch on main keys, Dale Crooks on guitar, Brandon Coleman on second keys and auxiliaries, who is his own artist in his own right. All these guys are artists in their own right. Byron Miller on bass, Dale Crooks on guitar, Brandon Coleman on second keys, and either Ronald Bruner on drums or Trevor Lawrence on drums.
Okay. Before you continue, for those who don't know exactly what a jam session is, how would you describe it, like in a few sentences?
A jam session is pretty much guys getting together, a group of guys getting together.
There's a core band that starts, right?
A group of guys getting together, playing a selection of songs that they either chose before the gig or they're calling out right then and there in the gig, or they're improvising.
Yeah.
For the first set, for the most part, for the first set, they have a set show, and then the second set turns into either a jam session where people will come up and sit in.
Yeah.
And either they call a song or the people that's running the jam session calls a song and you got to play the song.
One more question. How important is it to go and participate in these jam sessions when you are new in a city or?
I feel it's very important.
Why?
Because it's you going to the playground and you're a new kid. It's you going to the playground or going to the pool or going to the dog park and getting acclimated into the community and seeing what's actually happening with inside the community.
Yeah.
You know, the musical community, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, making connections and letting people see you, not only talking, but just like doing what you do, playing, right?
Yes. Yes, that part. But you don't necessarily have to go and play, because a lot of people don't go and play.
Yeah.
No matter how much you say you should go and get involved,
okay.
Not a lot of cats actually go and get involved. But it's, you know, I feel it's important to go and check out what's happening and what's being played and listen to the songs, because, you know, to me, it's still an institution.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's real life application.
Yeah.
The jam session scene, you're either gonna fly or you're gonna crash and burn. And both are good.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Failure, you know, if you crash and burn, yeah, you may get a sense of failure, but failure is not bad.
You just learn a few things.
You figure out, okay, so I didn't do well on this song. All right, cool, so how can I do better on this song? I'll go listen to the song.
Yeah.
I'll go learn the song. I mean, it's a lot of like, you know, with that being said, it's a lot of ego within play, because now, like, you're dealing with people that will give you the side eye if you don't know a song.
Yeah.
And then now you have to go within yourself and go away from that feeling, either mad about why this dude side-eyed me about not knowing this song, why am I supposed to know this song, whoop-de-whoop-de-whoop. Yeah, you can go that direction, or you can be like, you know what, I don't want this guy side-eyed me anymore, I like his playing, I want to play with him, I'll learn the song. So now it's like, when you're crashing or when you're taking the nosedive, you know how to maneuver to get out of that nosedive. And then if you think about it, man, like, not to go too deep in it, but if you think about it, really, you start to notice you're focusing too much on yourself in the first place. When you focus more on what's happening on the bandstand, you become more present. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there really wouldn't be any more side-eyeing as much as it is like everybody's checking for each other.
It's not a solo gig or anything.
Exactly.
You're playing with a band.
It's a team
sport.
You
need to be able to listen to it.
Yeah. If it were to be a sport, it will still be a team sport.
So what happened when they took you to this jam session?
Oh my God.
For the first time. Like,
so, all right. So the first time I go there.
How mind blown were you?
Bro, I was.
By the way, mind blown. Let's just get a little closer. We're going to talk about that a little bit later.
Bro, it was really mind blowing. It was crazy. I got there. I say hey to my man Tim. A bunch of guys walk up. At this time, you know, Thundercat was there. Like, I know him as Steven.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, at the time, he was still Steven. Like, he was still Thundercat, but, like, everybody was calling him Steven. So it was like, yo. Like, he was another guy that was there hanging out. Like, it was a killer. 2005. Summer of 2005. August 2005 is when I first arrived. I go there. I'm there. I'm looking at everybody. I don't know anybody. No music is being played yet. So I kind of got there on a break. So Ronald walks up. He sees Tim, says, what's up to Tim? Sees me. It was like, Tim introduced me. Sean Horton, Ronald Brunner. Was like, yo, what's good to meet you, man? Yeah, really one of the first guys to like really greet me, him and his brother Steven's like, oh, you know, really cool.
Yeah,
so we're talking, he's like, hey man, it's like, you playing? I was like, yeah. He's like, you gonna sit in? I was like, nah, I'll just come to check it out, like what anybody would do. He was like, all right, cool. So mind you, Ronald has on this Ronald, like, it's Ronald, so he got on like this bubble vest on, whatever. I don't know why he's wearing a bubble vest. It's probably chilly outside at that time. And then he had a shirt that says Chick Diggs Drummers. So that could have given me an idea of like what I was in for, you know what I mean? So they get up and they play this song called Tell Me a Bedtime Story by Herbie Hancock.
Okay.
That team playing that song, you heard the song.
Okay.
You heard the song.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then I heard the song, how they would play it. And I'd never heard that before in my life. I've never heard people play like that in front of me, like that, ever. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen some dope music. Like, it's a lot of dope musicians in Buffalo. It's a lot of great musicians in Rochester. A lot of great musicians in both in upstate New York. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then when I went back to go listen to the record, it was like, wow, it sound the same.
Yeah.
It sound, you know, the
live,
same.
It
sound the same. It sound like these cats learned the music.
Yeah, yeah.
And they translated it.
What happened after that?
Right, like, and from a journalist, mind you, I'm coming from Rochester on a full scholarship to this school, the LA Music Academy. So I'm feeling like I'm doing okay. I'm like, all right, let's go. Like, I'm about to go. I'm about to go. Yo, this dude started playing, and he was like going for blood, and like it was like he was looking at me or staring in the direction the whole time, and I'm just staring. Like, meanwhile, like just in the inside, like. Confidence level is like all time low, bro. Like, seriously,
and crying in the inside.
Oh my gosh! And I literally walked away from that night. Mind you, this is when I first got to LA.
If anything, it should encourage you to like
equally inspired and depressed at the same time.
So it made you
equally
lock yourself in the practice room.
Inspired and depressed.
Okay, I know the feeling.
We're the same age.
Okay.
Me and Ron, we're the same age, you know what I mean?
Okay.
But in my head, this dude was so light years old. Like, he played like an older man. He played like Dennis. He played like Dennis. Like, in my head, mind you, I don't know, like, I know what I know, and at the time, it wasn't very much.
Did you participate in that one? Jam session?
No.
Okay. When was the first time you participated in a jam session?
I can't remember, man.
Was it shortly after? Like, around those
years? No. Maybe, but it was a different jam session. Like, you know, it was like Cozy's. Cozy's was another famous jam session.
Okay.
That's where I saw, like, Jubal Smith playing guitar, who was another iconic figure in the musical community. Hands down. No, like, he's an iconic character, hands down. But now, like, the whole time I was in school, it was go to school.
Yeah.
I'll probably go to a jam session and then go jam with some guys at the school after the jam session or before I go to the jam session.
That's cool.
You know, like, the school was really animate about playing in a band situation.
Yeah.
So
how different, sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're fine.
Before we move on, I wanna know from you, how important is the church in your formation as a musician?
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, very important. It's pretty much the cornerstone.
Okay.
That's where it started for me.
Yeah.
That's where I first heard music. In my eyes, in my head, that's where I first recognized music.
So more than something that you learned, is something that you grew up in, it was part of your life.
Yeah,
daily life.
It was just like getting up and playing with my toys. My first drum set was my bed. I made a drum set out of my bed, and whatever I would listen to John P. Key on the radio or whoever is on the radio, and I'll play to that. I remember recording myself one time. Mind you, let me tell you my first drum set.
Yeah.
Math book on my bed.
It's the biggest one.
The biggest one on my bed. Or I used the post as a hi-hat. That, remember, we had the big beds, big wooden beds. So the post was the hi-hat. I stuck my brother Dimitri used to play trumpet in band back in the day. And he stopped playing, but he still had his trumpet and the trumpet case. Sorry about this. I take the trumpet case and I'll make it my foot pedal. I'll grab the handle with my toes and drop it. That'll be a single. I'll grab the handle with my toes. Drop it and kick it. That'll be a single. Or I'll hold on to it and kick it. That'll be like a single, whatever. And then I'll drop it and then kick it again. That'll be a double because it'll be like doo-doo, right? So, and then I'll have I'll take the trumpet and stick it into the other side of the bed. That will be the ride cymbal kind of crash. The
trumpet bell.
The bell.
My God.
Sorry.
That's all right. Sorry. Thanks for coming, brother. Thanks for coming. How you gonna do that, bro?
Yo, I'm sorry, man.
You can't tell me that. I'm a trumpet player.
Do you know what a crash of doom is?
No.
Those of you drummers know what a crash doom is. That's exactly what the bell of the horn looked like at the time. My mom used to drive buses, like school buses back in the day. So I would have the first aid kit, the box, the aluminum or the metal box as a snare, because it had a nice high pitched sound. So it sounded like a piccolo snare drum. Yeah. I remember, and I had my pillows as toms or whatever, right? So I had a drum set. Or hangers, break the hangers, used to those were the best. The wire hangers with
with the little cardboard thing.
The cardboard, bro.
Yeah.
Yo, on the aluminum, it sound like a steel drum, but like a nice fire.
What was your first gig here in town, in LA? Your first kind of nice gig that you're this is this is a serious gig.
Serious gig, yeah. In LA? The gig that got me the Macy gig was playing this gig with this amazing actor, an amazing fire singer named Chaz Shepard.
Okay.
You will remember Chaz Shepard as if you were into the sitcoms back in the day. He was the only black guy on Seventh Heaven. It's funny. If you watched Set It Off with Jada Pinkett Smith and Queen Latifah, he was the brother that got shot. He was that guy. It's funny. But amazing singer. We did a gig at B.B. King's at Universal City Walk when it was still there. The keyboardist was the M.D. from Macy Gray.
Okay.
And it was me, her name is Cassandra O'Neill, my man Tim Bailey on bass. I can't remember all the other musicians at the time, but I remember driving in the car with the two of them going to pick up our checks. And she offered me, she was like, are you interested in the gig? The Macy gig? I was like, nah, no, I'm okay. Only I said that because I didn't believe her. I thought she was BSing, you know what I mean? My man Tim was like, you better take that. Mind you, Tim has been with me since the beginning. I met Tim at the camp. So accountability, you know what I mean? He was like, you better stop playing.
So I
was like, all right, cool. So it turned out to be an audition. I go and I do the audition and I get the gig.
Nice.
You know what I mean?
How was it? How long were you with Macy?
From 2000, the summer of 2006, maybe 2006, because I was still in school while I was playing with her. So
okay, did you do some traveling with her?
Yeah, a lot of traveling while I was in school. Thank God for the dean of students and the teachers there. They were cool enough to count it as work study.
Yeah, that's cool.
So that gig lasted. I was with Macy from 2006 on until 2008 is when I went to play with Natasha Bedingfield.
Okay.
It was a dope gig, different genre of music, different, whole different like community of people.
Okay.
I really wasn't aware of what was happening at the time because I was so young and it was like, I'm just playing music and this girl is a killing bass player. Talking about Tal Wilkenfeld.
Yeah.
And we did a couple of clinics, so like, you know, but the biggest gig was like, the big gig was the Macy gig, and then you know, Natasha, and then Kobe Calais for a point.
How did these gigs like help you develop as a musician, as a professional musician in town?
It beat my ass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
you gotta be,
It really, like, you know,
on your right head.
Yeah, it taught me a whole different side of the music industry, of being a professional musician. Like, yeah, you can be good, but it was really, you know, there are a lot of good musicians, but like, how many of them do you want to hang around and spend time around and just be around for a long period of time?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That side of it, I didn't know anything about. So being so young, you know, I think it's supposed to be this one way. Everything's black and white, but it's not, you know what I mean? It taught me how to, you know, just coexist, you know what I mean, with individuals that I don't know.
Yeah. Did you have, up to this point, have you had any, like, issue, like, you know, any hard times, maybe on your plane or with other musicians,
yeah,
or something?
Yeah.
How do you deal with it?
It's more about me than it is anyone else.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Is that how you have to view it?
You have to.
Okay.
Because you are your biggest enemy. Your issue with one person is your issue. It's not theirs.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, whether or not if it's what they're playing, whether or not if it's with how they treat other people, whether or not if it's how they treat you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's your thing. Now, if they're being disrespectful, then it's up to you to either correct it or let it fly, you know what I mean?
Okay.
I'm the person, I'm from, you know, I always say I'm from Rochester, like, you know, and to me, it means something because I grew up there and I know what the culture is like there, and I know, I grew up learning how to maneuver in that type of culture, fight or flight type of culture, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're either gonna, you know, confront it, or you're gonna run away from it, or not, you know what I mean?
That's actually a good advice, man.
You know what I mean? And sometimes, like,
perspective.
Yeah, yeah, perspective, man. I learned that. And like, I'm not afraid of confrontation. You go through the confrontation, you break through whatever started the confrontation. Now you can actually get to the root of whatever's happening.
Yeah.
That doesn't work all the time. You either gonna win or lose kind of vibe, you know what I mean? And that's the culture I come from. And after it's done, you're gonna squash it and move on.
Yeah. What's the hardest part of being a professional musician for you? What would you say?
The hardest part.
Is it for you the music part? Is it for you the business part? The relationship part?
Now, when I say this, don't take it as a negative. When I look at hard, I look at challenging. And when I look at a challenge, or when I look at someone's challenging me, it's like, all right, cool. Like, do I want to take this challenge? Or do I not want to take this challenge? If it seems enticing to me, if it's going to benefit me and make me a better me, then I take on that challenge. Now, the hardest thing about being a musician, I don't know, because it's a lot of different perspectives you can take, a lot of different ways you can look at it. Listen, it's easier said than done.
Yeah.
Because because if you think about it, you're only playing music for either 45 to 2 hours. Whenever you go on tour, you're on that stage for about 45 minutes to 2 hours tops. Maybe that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you still got 22 more hours happening while you're on the road with these people. You have to work with these people or not. It's your choice.
Yeah, yeah.
You're gonna have to do the gig or not do the gig. But if you say you're gonna do the gig. And be present and, you know, be cool, be cordial, like, don't grumble about it. Because if you did the gig and you say you're going to do the gig, you can't be on there, like, grumbling about whatever, you know what I mean?
So we met playing with a gospel artist, mm-hmm. Israel Hogan.
Right on.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your experience playing with him.
Great experience. I will call it a dream. Yeah, a dream. Because, you know, I grew up listening to the dude. You know, he came in and dominated and, you know, became one of the biggest Christian contemporary artists in the world, yeah. most remembered, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Now that we're talking about him, how would you say that you compare, like, a leader that is not a musician per se versus a leader who is a musician? For example, some singers that you've played with or I've played with, that they don't really, maybe they don't play an instrument per se, or mm-hmm. or piano, or they know very, very little mm-hmm. about music, versus an Israel, for example, that knows music, he plays music, piano, guitar, he knows yeah. what he's doing. Yeah. You know?
It's a trust thing.
Yeah.
It's a trust and a respect thing in my eyes. I mean, like, following him is a workout. It's a workout and it's boot camp.
Because but what you say at the same time, it is a workout because you're like on your toes, but at the same time, everybody follows.
Yeah.
It's a thing that everybody kind of knows where he's going.
Well, because he's a general. Good leaders are like hard to come by, are few far in between, because they can, good leaders inspire their soldiers yeah. to want to fight for them and play for them. You know what I mean? And then how they come off, like, you know, how they come off, like, a good leader is not, you know, it's not always yelling, blah, 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 like Phil Jackson is quiet. You know what I mean? His roar is like really quiet, but it makes it shakes the foundation. You know what I mean? He, you know, we call it chanking. He chanks, like he's chanking away. Like when he really wants to go and push it, it's all you know, you'll hear the chank, chank, chank happening. It's just, and it goes, and it's like he's really digging in, you know what I mean? Yeah. So you can't really have him too loud in your monitors, because
it's a trip playing with him.
Yeah, it's fun. He knows how to piece a team together.
Yeah.
Bring guys together, like bring guys and singers together, guys and girls together. Like, he knows how to, like, that's the one thing I love about him. He has a great ear for music.
Now, he also listens to ideas too. That's something that I love about
yeah.
him. It's always like,
always, you know, open, yeah.
He knows that it's not always what he says, but he wants to see what's everybody's opinion about.
Yeah, yeah. He's not so controlling. Not.
Hey, let's.
But real quick, I'm sorry. I have to say, he's not so controlling, but he will pull the reins if he needs to.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember, like, we had this one meeting one time, and he was like, you know, he had to tighten us up a little bit, and was like, you know what I mean? Like, and mind you, I was new, so it was like, you know, it's always that feeling of, you're talking to me. Like, I just got here. I'm cool. I think I'm cool. I just got here.
You're the drummer. So
I think I'm all right. But he definitely, you know, he had to pull the reins some, you know, sometimes, and was like,
yeah.
And, you know, everybody tighten up. You know what I mean? Like, whenever, you know, capping on deck. Everybody's at attention. You know what I mean? And. But, like, you know, that, yeah, he's a general, you know, he's a general.
All right, something that most people don't know, and maybe, you know, our English-speaking folks don't know who this artist is, but for you guys that, you know, live in Latin America or speak Spanish, know who Cristian Castro is. Can you believe that this guy played with Cristian Castro?
Yeah, it was funny.
Right?
Yeah, it was a good time.
How do you get that gig? What was the connection there?
Cheche Alera.
Okay.
I believe I'm saying his last name right. Cheche, amazing pianist, organist, just keys played crazy.
How was your experience playing with
It was great.
Christian.
It was different.
Yeah. I know.
It's different.
You're playing in different places that you've played.
Wait,
so
never.
Far.
I've never been to Latin America before that gig. Yeah. Not like that. Have I been? No. No, not before that gig. We pull up to the venue. We walk in, we're looking, it's like, wow, it's big in here. And I look down and I see, like, this circle, and like, I'm high up, so the circle looks relatively nice size. I keep going down the stairs, and the circle gets smaller and smaller, and I'm thinking, like, so what happens in here? Like, what's going on? What are you guys doing here, you know? And everybody's laughing, because some of the crew is, you know, they're Mexican as well, so they're like hollering, like Mexican and like Argentinian, you know what I mean? Like, you know,
yeah.
And they're cracking up at me, whatever. I'm like,
how do you find out?
I'm like, what's going on? I look down and I see like a chicken claw what looks like to be a chicken claw, and I'm like, just let me know if I'm on or not. Is this a cockfighting arena? Are we in a cockfighting arena right now? We're in a cockfighting arena right now, is it?
Who told you it was like a cockfighting arena?
I think our tech, one of my techs told me, was like, yo, I was like, dude, this is amazing. And like, you know, like the acoustics in there was horrible, man. I mean, it was terrible. It was terrible. It was bad. But you know, it was way different. I learned a lot. I how American musicians are viewed.
How's that?
Like, it's like, you know, better. Okay. Or like, that's like the higher echelon or whatever. Or I don't want to say better, but it's like, if you got an LA musician, especially if an LA musician, you got the real, you know what I mean?
That's how they see it.
Yeah, at least that's what, that was the word. Okay. That, you know.
It's not always true.
It's not always true. It's not always true at all.
Now that you're talking about gigs and all these gigs and how all the gigs, all gigs are the same. I know that you are all around musician. You play a lot of different styles and you do a good job at it.
I try to, I do my best.
And how hard has it been? What's your process when changing styles? When like, you know, you're playing a hard jazz gig one night, the next day you're playing covers. The next day you're playing gospel. The next day you're playing pop. You know, how do you prepare for that?
You learn the songs.
Yeah.
You learn the songs, if you learn the song, you'll learn the language.
Listening to the language,
what I mean?
Yeah.
You learn the song, you learn the language. Like, you'll learn what needs to be played. You'll learn the form. You'll learn what needs to be played, why they're playing what's being played. You'll play the song the way it was played on the record versus playing it how you heard it, okay. If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? Think about it. If I'm writing a song, if I wrote a song and I got my team of guys, I expect them to play the music that I wrote. You know what I mean? I had a thought about it today, like me thinking about, like, I was thinking about a tambourine part that I had in the song that I wrote. And I was thinking about, you know, a percussionist, whatever, and in a scenario. I think a lot about scenarios, almost to a fault. But I thought about, like, you know, a scenario of them coming up with their own part and not even playing the part of the song. And I'm thinking, like, hey, man, could you, this is the tambourine part. And them saying, well, I feel like it should be this. And I'm like, and just in my mind, this is all playing out in my mind. I'm thinking, like, I'm paying you to play the music that I sent to you, the music that I actually prepared for. If you knew the music, then you would know the actual tambourine part that I'm asking you to play. But you don't, so you're trying to figure out your own part.
Yeah, it's a matter of respect, you know, to not only the music, but you as the arranger or creator.
You know what I mean?
And it's just like, in the professional world, like, if you do that often, you're not gonna get called again. You know, that's what happens, right?
Yeah, it's like, you don't care about me. You don't care about the music that we're trying to make right now. You don't even care about the bandstand, because all you care about is the part that you're trying to come up with.
Yeah.
That's not the part on the record, though.
That's good.
The band is playing the record. Yeah. Why aren't you playing the record? It's like being on a Call of Duty. Like, I know we got gamers that watch this, right? So it's like being on a Call of Duty map with a team of guys. And you got this one guy that's always just veering off doing something else, and the team is moving as a unit, but you keep drifting. Why are you drifting? Come back. We need you here. Like, no, you want to do your own thing. You want to go jump off the trees and, you know, blow people up with, like, you know, AR, whatever, you know, bombs.
That's the first one to die.
That's the first one to die. You're giving away our location. One,
yeah.
The people know that we're coming. They know which way we're coming from. Like, you're killing us is what's happening. And, like, if you think about it, if you're playing with somebody that's constantly doing what they want to do, that's what it feels like. It's like, yo, you're killing us. You're killing the vibe. You're killing the bandstand. Why are you doing it? Are you mad? You got an alt with somebody right now, or you just want to do your own thing?
I didn't know you were a gamer.
I don't play Call of Duty. The respect thing is, like, you know, it comes from leaders as well. Like, I know I got a team of leaders. I know all you guys are killers. and I respect what all of you do. So I don't need to stand over your back like, no, that's not right. No, because you already know. Yeah. So if anything, it's more of an acknowledgement when I look back and I'm playing and I look at my guitar player, he's playing that part that I love, and I'm like,
yeah.
It's more of an acknowledgement, like, yeah, man. You got that. Like, I don't have to say anything because everybody's all on the same page looking at each other like, yeah, yo, we're rocking right now. We're really vibing right now. And that's when, in my head, not to get too spiritual with it, that's when I feel like the room gets bigger. Because now the bandstand is rocking and like we're really vibing out and now we're doing this together.
Mm-hmm.
Now the audience sees us doing this. They start doing it.
Yeah.
Now, if you think about it, we've made the whole room become a metronome.
So finish up.
Yes.
This is a question that I always ask at the end. And what's your advice? What's Sean's advice to whoever wants to, you know, live off doing music full time?
Okay. Learn how to be a team player. Meaning, it's not all about you. You know what I mean? Make it about the goal and be behind that goal. If you have, you know what I mean? Like, make it about the goal in the bandstand, in the team, in the bandstand. Really. Really. If you make it about that, it makes everything else easier. The bandstand, the music. The music, the bandstand. You know what I mean? Be supportive. You know what I mean? No matter what position you play on the band, whether you're a sax player, keys, trumpet, drums, bass, even though if in my head, drums and bass, we're the supporters, like we're the foundation. So it's our responsibility to like really be behind the team and like push them when needs be pushed and give that support. I'd rather be behind the team pushing than be in front of the team pulling. Because nobody likes to get jerked around. Mm-hmm. That's whack. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So being behind, if we have everybody behind each other, pushing each other, it's more a supportive situation now, right?
It's good.
Nobody feels like they're being counted out. Nobody feels like they're not being listened to. Everybody feels like they're being included. It's all inclusive, not exclusive. If you make that like a primary goal within a team setting, you always win, no matter how good the players are, because you'll bring the best out of them.
Yeah.
It's easier said than done, because you may not get the best of players, but if you're not looking for the best of players and you're looking for the best music that you can make, you'll win.
Yeah. Come on. Sean, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here, man. Thanks for taking the time, bro.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah,
man. That was great.
Good time.
Thank you, everyone, for watching.
What up?
Musicians Talk Music on YouTube.
Talk Music.
Or via podcast. Any of the podcast platforms.
Platform.
You can check it out.
Check it out.
Yeah. And I'll see you the next time.
Come on. Tune in.
Check it out.
Check it out. Am I still...